Good morning, everybody. It's time for the Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. It's Elder Care Radio, only on News Radio 890-92.5 KDXU. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
Good morning, Southern Utah, and a wonderful shout out to our friends in Cedar City. We have had so many calls from them this week, and we're always excited to help your community in Cedar, as well as the rest of Southern Utah. We are Elder Care Radio, your healthcare system resource, and we know that this is a difficult system to navigate. If you have any questions or would like to give comments, our telephone number is 435-477-6999, or look us up on our website. Find out more about us and who we are at pathwayhospicecare.com. We look forward to meeting you.
So today we were, I guess, sometimes events happen, and you can't deny that they must be happening in a particular order for a particular reason, even though they're totally separate and indistinct.
That's very obtuse, Richard. I have no idea what you're talking about.
You will. Give me
all right,
a minute.
So we just had two different events happen, or series of events happen, and yet they are so interconnected and interrelated.
Well, and I will actually say, this is kind of a common turn of events, but specifically, they all kind of came together at a point this last week, and we thought, oh, gosh, we don't really talk about this. We need to. So we decided we'd write our program around that.
Ooh, yeah.
So we have occasionally had people recommend books and things that they've read that they thought were really great. And it's surprising that over just the past little bit of time, we've had a number of recommendations to read a particular book.
The same book?
Yeah. One of them from a listener. We've had other people that we've known who said, you guys really need to read this book because it really integrates with what you've been trying to say in so many different ways. And so we've been researching that. And then in a totally different event, we had an opportunity to share some time with some family members of somebody that we've been working with. And they were open and honest with us and gave us some insight into, their experiences with us, the relationship we had and the conversations that we had. And this was, there was a lot of conversations and so it was interesting to hear, their perspective on what transpired in that. Anyway, so the book is called Being Mortal.
By Atul Gawande.
Yeah.
Did you practice that? That sounds like a hard name.
Atul Gawande?
Gawande. Okay, yeah. I said Gawande.
Yeah, okay.
I hope I'm closer
than I would have been, Kaylee.
I'm hoping I pronounce it right. The title is Being Mortal, Illness, Medicine, and What Matters in the End.
Nice.
I think you can imagine from that, it's talking about a doctor's perspective on this whole conversation.
And very importantly, it specifically addresses palliative care and how if you're that there comes a time that you really need a palliative care doctor that understands palliative care. And we've been trying to stress that so much. And I think that's why so many people recently have reached out to us and asked about this book. And I even had one to go so far as to say that you should suggest on the radio and to all your listeners and patients for them to ask their doctors if they have read this book. Because if they haven't read the book, Being Mortal, by Atul Gawande, then they may not know what you're looking for as out of your health care. And if you are really looking for the highest quality of life, the best life you can possibly live for as long as you can live, then, you want to address that.
So let's start with a story. Okay, so a good neighbor and friend had realized that his husband and wife were really struggling. They were having a hard time making it through the day, and so this neighbor had made a suggestion that they give us a call. And we didn't get that call, It took a long time for this couple to choose to call us, and it turns out that they wanted their family involved in that conversation before they did that. So when they did call us, everybody was on the line, and we were talking to them. We started talking about the care that we can provide. We talked about the word palliative and the types of care that fit under that word. And as the conversation continued, one of the sons asked, "Is this hospice?" We said, "Well, palliative care goes far beyond what hospice standards are, but
right, not always."
Yeah, but we haven't even talked about qualifying for hospice. This is just range of cares. But as soon as that comment came up, the entire conversation changed. We had to deal with a whole lot of emotional conversation, a whole lot of questions, a whole lot of things. I mean, the family was distraught. You know, when that word became part of the conversation, the whole conversation changed. I mean, the family was distraught. There was no question. You know, they had a lot of objections, making statements like, "We're not ready for hospice," whatever that means, because if it doesn't matter whether you're ready for hospice or not, whatever we do isn't going to change the outcome of this, right? We don't want to give up, and you know, many of the other common fears and statements that we hear all the time.
Myths.
And so we, tried to point out that we have no idea if he's even eligible for hospice. We're just having a conversation about things that we could do, and we tried to calm him down, make sure that they understood, but there was just so many aspects of that, and it was interesting later to hear their side of these conversations and to get that other input. But one of the things that happened almost immediately was, because they had that conversation, because they were able to verbalize their fears and the unknown, it actually helped them kind of get a handle on it. So
process,
So it was good for that. And there was information that was hard for them to hear. You know, once we got the, and this wasn't just one conversation, this was a series of conversations we had, over a period of time. But once we got the medical information, once we'd had that first conversation and we were able to get the same information that the doctor has about the situation and the condition, and we had a conversation, and certainly we talked about things that they may have heard from their doctor but don't remember hearing from their doctor. We did a number of, things to help them understand where we were at in this progress. All of these are hard conversations, but they were able to get a handle on that and come to that conclusion. And these are hard discussions to have. First they wanted to deny, and they were afraid that if they agreed to hospice, they would be giving up. And we explained to them that hospice isn't a requirement, right? It's a choice. It's just another alternative way of managing the day that exists. We're not changing anything. We're not sending this in a different direction. We're just going to work with what we have. So, we had to explain that this is just an offer, and they certainly don't have to choose it, but they should consider what their options are. And so we had a lot of those uncomfortable conversations, and when you're talking about diagnosis and prognosis and probable outcomes and time frames, those are hard things. So that's the ugly part of this story. And, we talked that over with them, and they gave us a little bit of insight. Because we had those plans, because we had discussed all of that planning and the things that were available, they had some opportunity to consider what was important to them. We asked them what their goals were. And you should understand that you should have goals. Everybody should have goals of what they want to accomplish. And those goals may not be the same for everybody, and they may change over time. But you should have goals, and you should have an opportunity to talk about those goals. For the patient, certainly they should have a goal of managing the ailment the best they can to alleviate pain and manage symptoms and reduce anxiety. But it should be more than that. Helping with the daily activities, the things that can be, a little bit more difficult to accomplish. We want to help people do that and take that off the table so they're not as overwhelmed and burdened with that. Whether that's, bathing and eating, or just trying, maybe they have something that they really think is important to get done, and they want to do that. And I can't stress enough that it is vitally important that we look at ways to accomplish those things that are important to us. That's the reason we are living, is to accomplish things. And so don't postpone any of that. Look forward to doing that. And for the caregiver, just the ability to renew themselves, to have a little bit of time on their own, to maybe lift some of that burden, those can be goals. Relieving those stresses, those are all very important things to do. And then, of course, for the family, being able to be involved and to to accomplish, to find goals to accomplish and do those things, those are all important too. So consider what those goals are. And when we were going through all this and we had this opportunity to talk later, you know, they talked about how hard those conversations were. But in that, we had some laughing and we had some crying. And certainly there were a number of nights of, you know, silent contemplation for many of them, considering those circumstances. But because of this, every member of that family was able to find peace. They were able to resolve a lot of problems, and in part because they were involved in making life great. You know, we set up a plan. We had them determine what they wanted to do, and they had a goal and a purpose and an activity list that they could do to do this, and they created far more important memories. So we just think it's incredibly valuable to have those conversations, and they're hard conversations to have.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that there's no better time to have that conversation than when it doesn't really matter.
Oh, yeah, in advance.
Yeah. Open up that conversation with your family. Not about, okay, this is where I'm at today, but this is where we could be, and these are some things that we want to make sure that everybody knows. So let me keep going. and I guess that in this book that we were reading through, one of the phrases he uses is there are things that are unfixable. It's a pretty simple phrase.
Mm-hmm.
But in life, there are things that are unfixable. And he points out.
It is. And I think that's really a heavy question, but probably the most important thing to ask. Because we find so often that people are offered procedures because they don't ask that question that honestly probably hastened death, not extended life.
Right.
And so if you're not willing to ask that very scary question...
Is this going to fix it for me?
That's right. Mm. If you're not willing to ask that scary question, you may be doing more damage than good. And I know that that's a hard thing to consider, but it is a fact, and we see it every day.
Well, and in fact, there was a program on Frontline, on PBS, about this gentleman in this book and his perspective, and he shared some stories, and I think it's an interesting program to watch. It talks about people who are in these hard situations and the fact that there is no fixing it. But this book was really about his evolution of understanding, because he came out of medical school with this understanding that I'm ready to fix everything. And obviously, I think every doctor would agree that medical school didn't teach you everything. But the one thing that they absolutely didn't teach was the idea of dealing with this unfixable part. Here's a quote from him. Among the most uncomfortable difficulties with grappling with those cases where we couldn't solve the problem, the two big unfixables are aging and dying. You know, and this is just a quote from him. You know, they're not, you can't fix those, right? It's still hard to put into words, and it's hard to convey that. But it's exceptionally hard for a doctor to convey that to a family because of all the dynamics that are going into it. And we've talked about this on the show in the past, that your doctor may not be comfortable having this conversation. What this book does is explores all of the reasons that and concerns that a doctor has in having these conversations. When is a good time to have the conversation? When is the patient ready? How do you discern that? How do you just say, okay, there's really nothing left to do? And he goes into great detail in a number of areas about things that he did and he regrets doing because he knew that they weren't really going to do any good, but it allowed him to postpone the hard conversation.
Mm.
In the television show, he talks to some other doctors who are involved in this too, and he analyzes their hard conversations to have. So while he gave a lot of stories and we could go through that, I don't think we want to reiterate those stories. Those are his to tell. But we are interested in what the takeaways were in this, and some of the important takeaways. One, everybody wants to avoid those hard topics. There's no question. We all want to avoid it, and it really takes a valiant soul, somebody who's willing to go to the uncomfortable area to start that conversation.
Hmm.
And I would encourage everybody to start that conversation. At least start it with yourself. You know, talk about the things that you think are most important. Make your list of these are the things that I'm not willing to give up. These are the things that I am willing to give up. These are the things that are most important to me, the priorities. And start that conversation, at least with yourself, maybe with your spouse, maybe with your kids, maybe with your parents or grandparents. Just talk about, what if, at some point, because I think we can all agree that we are going to, quote, shuffle off this mortal coil, right? and if we aren't really ready to have a conversation about that because we think it's bad news. And I think that's, everybody would say that, man, you find out that you've got a terminal illness, that's really bad news. But let's look at it from this side. Medical science has been able to get their own crystal ball now and look into the future, right? We can actually see the future. And I think we all know that our future includes our passing. But now for some people, medical science can actually see that and give us a warning about that happening. And is a warning really bad news? I mean, is that bad news? Is it, if it's a warning, then should we act on the warning? And if we should act on the warning, what is the act that we should do? And those are, I think this is going to be an uncomfortable episode of this program because we're talking about hard things. But yeah. I really want to get people to consider that there are advantages to knowing instead of being blindsided. Advantages for the patient to be able to have that opportunity to accomplish things that are important to them. Terribly important to the family because every experience that we've ever had with people who have had time to deal with this inevitability and those that haven't, every time, the people who have had an opportunity to share and to experience it while the person was still alive were much better off than the people that weren't. So it's not bad news. It's uncomfortable news, but it can be gratifying and completely fulfilling to exercise on it. So I'm going to throw a couple of quotes in here from the doctor on care and the things that he had done or had expressed where he really had a problem. So having any kind of, this is from Dr. Gawande, having any kind of discussion that would begin to say, look, you probably only have a few months to live. Mm-hmm. What we do to make the best of this time without giving up on the options you have, and this is his part, that is a conversation I wasn't ready to have. I don't think any of us were.
Right.
That,
and, are we ever?
Yeah.
But it's still the conversation that needs to be had.
Yeah, and he talks about one of his patients. He says, when I came on the scene, was when she was diagnosed with a second cancer. In my mind, what I was thinking was, I wouldn't offer that surgery because the lung cancer is going to take her life. And yet, I didn't feel I could say that to them.
It's tough.
It is tough.
And don't judge that person, because I'm sitting on the other side, reading this book and realizing, man, how do you tell people, give people more bad news, right? How is it that you just pile on the bad news instead of trying to be the person that's giving them hope and everything else, but
which is what they desperately want.
Oh yeah,
they want that hope,
yeah.
And yet you don't have any, and you don't want to tell them that.
We don't always admit this, but we really do want to please people, especially mm-hmm. Give it the doctor and patient scenario. I mean, they want to be able. They go to school to find solutions for you. They want to be able to offer you those solutions. It's really hard to say, I'm not going to be able to fix this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so here's a really hard one. He says, in the last 3 months of her life, almost nothing we'd done, the radiation, the chemotherapy, had likely done anything except make her worse. It may have shortened her life. What was interesting to me, and this is him on reflection, what was interesting to me was how uncomfortable I was and how unable I was to deal well with her circumstances. It felt like a revelation that here was a case which I could unpack enough to understand. Why do we always go off the rails? Why do these conversations not happen? But I want to tell you, this was his story of this evolution of thought. And he told a story, and I'm going to tell this story about his relationship with his dad. Now, his dad came from India and had become a successful surgeon in New York. And he, followed that line and that path and had become a successful surgeon in Boston at Brigham and Women's Hospital. And he had conversations with his dad. because his dad had developed some pain in his neck, and he thought maybe he'd overexerted himself, but found out that it was a tumor on his neck, on his, you know, wrapped around his spine. And he, in reflection, realized that these two surgeons were looking at this tumor, which ultimately was, you know, there's nothing that could be done. But they were just sitting there contemplating it for days and weeks and months, saying, so how do we fix this? Like, and as he says, like two carpenters looking at a house, right?
You know, it's so interesting. As I was reading that portion, in my heart, I kept thinking, could you imagine these two doctors who know what they're looking at, a father and son, and neither of them had the guts? What would the word? They did not want to say, okay, I can see this is... It's not going to be able to be fixed, right?
It's the unfixable.
Right. So instead, they look at all that we could try, we could try, we could try, neither of them being willing to be the first one to make the comment until finally someone does.
Right. So I completely understand that impasse that they were at. I don't think I can put better words to this than he did. So I'm just going to quote him here. He says, in medicine, when we're up against the unfixable, we're often unready to accept that they are unfixable. But I learned that it matters to people how their stories come to a close. The questions that we ask one another just as human beings are important. What are your fears and worries for the future? What are your priorities if time becomes short? What are you willing to sacrifice, and what are you not willing to sacrifice? My dad made his wishes for what his life would be like to the very end, very clear to us, including what should happen even after the very end. He wanted to be cremated in the traditional Indian way, and he wanted his ashes spread on the Ganges River. We took his ashes, my sister and my mother and I, to the ancient city of Varanasi, one of the oldest cities in the world, with a swami and a boatman taking us out in a dinghy, and it was an amazing thing. Millions, literally millions of families that have brought their ashes of somebody in their family who's died to the Ganges. That connection to people going back that many years makes you feel like you're connected to that many years going forward as well. I felt he had brought us there and connected himself to all that was important to him. And really, that's a huge legacy for this family, to have this opportunity to experience his childhood directly, to go to the places where he lived and do that. And he had the power, because he chose to control his life all the way up to the end. He had the power to have that kind of influence.
Something very, very important, and I think we all want to know how people want their end or their final destination to be fulfilled. But if we're afraid to ask, then we're stuck with regret. I wish I would have known. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have asked how they wanted this to go forward. I'm going to start to wrap things up a little bit and say, we can provide this book to you. If you would like to give our office a call at 435-477-6999. Again, our telephone number is 435-477-6999. We would be happy to send you an email link to a copy of this book. It's already been downloaded in a PDF format, so we're happy to provide that for you. Please look us up on our website, pathwayhospicecare.com. You're welcome to request a copy of that link through pathwayhospicecare.com. There's a contact us button, and you can email it the request as well. We would love an opportunity to help your family through this very difficult conversation, and we'll just possibly help you find the questions that you need to ask of your doctor so you can find out for yourself.
And we weren't asked to promote this. We just wanted to share the stories that we got out of it and the importance of it. So there's no cost, and we're just happy to share this information.